Hey, welcome back to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you live in the UK and you sell on Amazon, whether that's in the UK or the US. I do both, and many of the people in the Facebook group do as well. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, by the way, we're getting close to 500 members now. I've got about 475 members, so pop along there and join in. www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. You've heard it before if you've listened to the podcast. So today we are dealing with questions from that very same Facebook. So we have three questions from members of the Facebook. Very good questions. Some of them are sort of newbie-ish questions. Some of them are a little bit more advanced. But these are from people who are hitting ordinary everyday Amazon problems, but you know, haven't hit them before and need some help. So here's question number one from Corinne. She says, hi, I hope everyone's doing great. We are fine, thanks, Corinne, but we've got our challenges, as you have. So let's get into it. I've got a few questions, she says, that I need your help on. First, I'm not an American, but I want to sell on Amazon.com. I've sent a few small packages to Amazon FBA. There was no issue at all until I started sending 15 cartons. When I sent these in, I didn't have a federal tax ID number, so I needed to spend $500 to have a freight forwarder help me. Then I tried 8 cartons through DHL, which declared $1,200 for the customs. However, it still got rejected by the customs. It seems the FEIN is required if I want to ship my inventory to FBA. I'm not trying to escape any tax issues, but to get an FEIN number, I would need a legal address in the US, and I'm not in the US. How do you guys deal with this? Any ideas would be very, very, very helpful for me. Okay, so Corinne's obviously feeling the stress. So, few things to say. Freight is complicated, and importing to the US can get complicated. So what you haven't mentioned is what form of freight you're using. So let's just break that in quickly down. So we've got three forms of freight. One is you've got to have air courier, which is the simplest. You've got air freight and you've got sea freight. Okay, sea freight's obviously for heavier items or for large consignments. So it doesn't sound like you're there yet. So the other two options are air courier and air freight. Air courier simply means something like DHL, UPS or FedEx, i.e. an own courier, that your supplier will have an account with, and your supplier will simply call them up and use their account with the courier to get your shipment sent. Now, that's good because they have special customs clearance channels. It sounds to me like maybe you're using air freight. I'm not sure. If it's going via DHL, it shouldn't be such an issue, but it does depend how your supplier has set it up, right? So there's various things you need to look into, and there are places on the blog where I have quite a lot of detail about this, and actually maybe I should create a special page of resources for you guys. In fact, I'm going to do that. If I haven't done it, and then this episode in sort of early August, then give me a dig in the ribs, get over to the Facebook group and remind me, guys, and I'll do it for you. But basically, you need to make sure the paperwork is set up with your details in America, and that the paperwork on the commercial invoice is set up such that you have, you know, cleared these problems out of the way before it leaves China. Now you've got a problem. The first thing to say is a freight forwarder is not the same thing as a customs broker. Now, USA and I believe Canada, but I haven't dealt with Canada. Certainly in the USA, a customs broker has to be qualified and pass through certain official sort of exams, certain official hoops. That's not the case in the UK. So in the UK, there may be people that focus on customs clearance and people who focus on freight forwarding generally, sometimes including customs clearance, but that isn't a rigid division in the UK or in Europe. I'm not sure about the rest of the world, haven't dealt with that. But the US specifically have people who are licensed customs brokers, and they are the experts in getting stuff through customs. So what you strictly speaking need is not a freight forwarder, but a customs broker. Now, some people do both. A company that I've used in the past is Western Overseas Corporation. You need to speak to a lady called Susan Park there specifically. And I can certainly send you details. And Corinne, I've already helped you on the Facebook group with that. But if anyone else is having the same issue, then come to the Facebook group, ping up a question, and I'll let you know Susan's details. But just to be clear, some freight forwarders do not deal with customs brokering. So that's the first thing, get the right help. So it's declared $1,200 for customs. That should be what's called an informal import. It's not about the size of the consignment, probably. An EIN, let's talk about that. EIN is something like extra something importer number, external importer number, not sure, but it's basically for anyone who's not a United States resident themselves, or their company isn't based in the United States. As far as I know, strictly speaking, you don't need a US address to get an EIN as a foreign entity, that is a foreign person or foreign company, like a UK limited company. But if you do need one, and you certainly should get a returns address for Amazon anyway, it helps your credibility apart from anything else, although I very rarely ask people to use it, but it helps credibility. Just Google for it. It's a very simple thing. I use myaddressus.com, which cost, I believe, about $5 or something a month. Really dirt cheap. And that should be it. It shouldn't be a big hairy deal to get an EIN number. Maybe it's changed since I got it, which was maybe a year and a half ago now or something, maybe even more like 2 years ago. But certainly, if you're sending in goods over the value of $2,500, it's a formal import, so you need a customs bond, etc. In theory, if it's going with DHL, UPS and FedEx, they should have a special customs clearance channel, so it should be fairly straightforward. But yes, at that point, I would certainly use a customs broker. I don't think, though, you need a freight forwarder unless you're doing air freight or sea freight, which is altogether more complicated. So I wouldn't really worry about a freight forwarder unless you are doing those things. So if you are going to use a customs broker, really, I'm not an expert in customs clearance in the US. It's a complicated area. Then ask the customs broker those questions. But just be clear about the difference between a freight forwarder and a customs broker. That's an important distinction in the United States, not so in the UK. Hope that helps. So this is question number 2. Ben Leonard says, "Hi, fellow FBAers. Here's my newbie experience post number 3. So it's not so much a question, but a bit of feedback, but it kicked off a bit of a debate, which I thought was really valuable. So I thought I'd put that through to you. So he says, "Hello, I've been selling for about 3 weeks in the UK. So where am I at? I picked a good product. It's flying off the shelves. I'm about halfway up page 1 for all my keywords. I told myself to be happy with 5 units a day, but I'm actually averaging 10 to 12 units a day. And then I increased my price and now average to 7 to 8 units a day. I've had days where I've had over 10 units, including a day of 16 units. They're not giveaways. All giveaways were done in the first week. First test run was 500 units. At the current rate, I'm going to run out quickly. So I'm trying to find the balance between maintaining sales and not running out of inventory. I'm still undercutting some competitors at the current price, but more expensive than others. I believe, and this is the bit that interests me, I believe the reasons it's going well so far are, number one, branding. My brand is easily one of the coolest. And as I expand, I'll grow a brand rather than Bob's generic stuff, which several of my competitors are doing. Number 2, social media. Many gurus say avoid social media until you're well established on Amazon. This is not a good move, in my opinion. I have an active Twitter and Instagram account and a new Facebook page. Okay, I haven't got many followers, but it's growing and I'm getting a bit of engagement. And number 3, branding. I said it again because it's so important. Branding is everything. Cool brands get bought. Generic crap doesn't. So interesting post there. Thank you, Ben, first of all, for updating us weekly. I think that's a very valuable thing for anyone to follow a newbie or even more advanced sellers sort of story, but particularly in the first few weeks are kind of, nail-biting stuff. And it's useful for other people. It's helpful. It's reassuring for other people to follow the highs and lows of other people's journey. So thank you for that. Now, very interesting that you picked up on branding. Now, there's been 2 very strong comments on this, which I thought were really worth putting across and then analysing. The first thing is from Alex. He said, "You're doing very well, but don't talk about brand building. People don't care. You drive them in your page and they just see information, reviews and price. Just set PPC automatic. If it doesn't work, move on." So Alex obviously got a very minimalist anti-brand building approach. Interesting. Susie says, "I love to hear you're growing a strong brand and that you understand and appreciate how important it is. I cringe so hard when I hear people say your branding doesn't matter. Nothing can be further from the truth." And then she says, "Have you had any issues with counterfeits hopping on your listing?" Which I don't think Ben's replied about that. But interesting approach. Now, I think, the answer is it depends what your outcome is. So let's look at this a bit more precisely. First of all, if you're interested in just making sales now, I don't think brand is that important on Amazon, right? Because people just want to buy stuff based on price because they don't know you yet. You don't have a brand yet. You haven't built a brand. So that's probably, in a sense, I think that Alex is absolutely right. It's based on price when it starts with, plus your photos and the sort of overlook and feel of the product, which you could argue is the beginning of branding, right? If you're going to be controversial. But the point is, yes, if your aim is just to make sales now, then that's okay. However, if you want to sell your business down the line, then you very much do need to build up a brand because that is part of what makes your business more defensible. And even if you're not wanting to do that, if you want to grow a business in the medium term, never mind long term, then you do need to grow a brand, because people will gradually begin to search by your brand name. That's when you know you really have a brand. It's called top of mind positioning. So if, for example, I say to you, trainers, you probably say Nike, possibly Adidas, but Nike has spent millions, probably hundreds of millions, on advertising, building this brand that is all about great athletes being linked with Nike. I mean, they just sell trainers, they're just pretty much a commodity these days, but they have built that brand, and they have built top of mind positioning for a particular product type. Now, there are some competitors that I have in the space of certain products that I sell in the music space, who I can see that people will actually search for the brand name for a particular type of product. So they have built a strong enough brand on Amazon, probably not off, because I'd never heard of them before I'd been on Amazon. So longer term, if you're aiming to build a strong brand and get searched for by brand, you do need to build a brand. And if you want to sell your company, it's one of the elements that makes it more defensible as a company. And it also helps convince customers to spend a little bit more money with you if you have more brand presence, like you have a Twitter account, Facebook, Google, for those who look for those things. Most won't. So I take Alex's point. I also take Susie's point as well. So let's not be simplistic about this. Let's try and see clearly, what is your business aim? Are you aiming to build an asset to sell, which I am now, and I wasn't really that interested before. But don't kid yourself that because you built a brand, and even if you stay within one area of Amazon, one category, that you will get lots of cross sales in the short term because of it, because you won't, because Amazon decides who it cross sells your product with. You know, it might sell, you know, Bob the Builder's, I don't know what you're selling, Ben, but it might sell Bob the Builder's planks of wood, and you're selling, you know, Ben's brilliant saws, you know, but it will put the two together as it likes. Eventually, though, we also, this is another longer term thing, even if you're not planning to sell a business, you might want to build it. In fact, you probably do want to build an on off Amazon element on a Shopify store. And at that point, if you want to have a Shopify store where you have some kind of brand, it's very much going to look much, much better if your Shopify store has a brand, has a type of category that you're after, and a type of identity and a branding and a look and feel and stuff. And again, so for that reason, and again, it's not about trying to kid yourself, you'll make more sales on Amazon, but going down the line, it counts. So I would start off by putting several products out there, maybe in different categories. Excuse me, effect of London air, not very healthy. Try and be in several different categories and maybe see which one takes off, and then follow that success. So don't necessarily assume that you have to limit yourself to one category. I think that's a mistake I made at the beginning. However, at some point, you are going to want to decide on a category and then on a brand and build a brand around that. And then the solution longer term is to build several brands, several different brand websites for Shopify, and have diversity that way, but rather than just being spread and all things to all people. So interesting discussion. Thanks for your updates, Ben. Keep them coming, and look very much forward to hearing more about your journey. But well done for getting started well. One of the more active members of the Facebook group, feeding back, asking a lot of questions, but also giving value. That's exactly the way to be if you're working with other people, is to be a member of a mastermind or a Facebook group, or you know, just even one-to-one. If you've got a sort of buddy who you work with sometimes, and I've got a joint venture partner that I'm exploring working with now, and, you know, we feed each other information all the time, and that's really valuable. So be the person who adds value. That's another small point there, kind of off the topic of Amazon, but very much on the topic of building good business relationships. So third email is a simple one from David, but with some more complex ramifications. So he's talking about email optimization. Hi, everyone. Just a quick question regarding your post-purchase email autoresponder sequence. I'm currently getting 8 and 9% conversion rates for feedback and reviews, respectively. I'd like to increase this and was thinking of shortening each email to make it more mobile friendly. Have any of you tested the length of copy and how this alters conversion? So David's another extremely active member of the Facebook group. So David, thank you for your contributions. Keep them coming. This is an interesting question. Now, my understanding with the other friends that I've spoken to, and it's been a while since I've spoken to anyone about this topic, is that really anything above 5% conversion on between the number of customers that you've got and the people either giving you seller feedback or product reviews is pretty good. I've averaged probably about 4 to 5% last time I was checking, and to be honest, I've been very slack about checking my statistics recently, and that's poor. So mea culpa, I would give myself a slap on the wrist and get back to it. But I think if you've got 8 or 9%, you're doing very well. Doesn't mean it can't be improved. So yes, it's definitely worth testing. The only thing I'd say is whenever you're doing a good conversion rate, on anything, whether that's in this case reviews or whether you've got a website where you're testing new pages and you've already got a good conversion rate, then quite likely if you test it, you might find that some variations will decrease the conversion rate for a bit. So don't be disappointed. But I do think that's a good idea. As to how you do it, I'm not sure. And I use something called Open Loop Email simply because it was sold to me as a package with the ASM Amazing Selling Machine way back when I started that. And it still seems to be working for me. So because I don't pay extra and I pay so much overheads for all the software, and I must go through and have a cull. That's one of the things on my to-do list for 2 months now. And you may be in the same position, but if you've got something like Feedback Genius or Sales Backer and they offer an option to do that, then fantastic. Otherwise, what I suggest you do is vary it manually, but try and be systematic about it. So try and vary it every 100 sales or something like that. And try and account for seasonality and things like that as well. But I mean, if you take, say, I don't know how many sales a week you're making, David, but say if you take you a week to do 100 sales, then you could swap them out after 2 weeks and then review. And maybe you need more than two variations. It might be you want to do three variations, one with longer email, one with a shorter email. Now, on a slightly broader question, which is not quite the question you asked, David, but on emails, I think that three is the optimum number these days, and I'll tell you why. Here's the sequence that I tend to follow by people like Kevin King, follow up on this stuff, and Ben Cummings. So what I tend to do is a kind of a blend of those two. But Ben Cummings, if you haven't come across him, does an awful lot of Amazon training. He's one of the so-called gurus. And by the way, I do not count myself as a guru. A guru means, I'm an expert in this, so somebody help me here. But guru, I understand, is originally meaning master in Indian sort of spiritual disciplines. And you sit at the feet of the guru and imbibe the wisdom coming from decades of sweat. Now, I've been sweating away, but only for a couple of years. I want to say that I don't think of myself as an online sales guru or Amazon guru. I've got a lot to offer because I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've also solved a lot of the problems, and I've encountered a lot of the standardized stuff, and I've standardized stuff for myself or taken it from other people. That being said, though, I'm not a guru. I have some expertise to offer, some specialism to offer, but I want to be clear about where my limitations are as well. I don't want to say that I know everything, because I really don't. And I think that I hope that comes across in the way that I do the podcast. I don't want false illusions about what I do and don't have to offer. However, I think if you've been following the podcast for a while, you know what I have to offer. That quite a lot of knowledge gets gained over 2 years of working at something, I guess. And also, above all, working with experts. So what I've learned from the experts is the following in email sequences. The first thing must just be something helpful. I think Kevin King just says, hope you receive the product. And interesting one, Kevin King wants to find out, and this is quite specific. This isn't about trying to get more reviews. Kevin King specifically says, can I just ask you why you bought the product? And that is timed in the USA. It's normally 2-day delivery. So it's timed to arrive the day after they've ordered it, or on the same day, but the day before, or the 2 days before they receive the product. So he wants to know, because once they receive the product, they will change their mind. Once you've actually had it in your hand, you forget what you thought before you bought it. So he wants to know, why have you bought it? Not how do you feel about it once you've got it, which is a different question. And it's a very powerful question in terms of your sales copy, or possibly even the sort of photos you use. So it's very, very smart thinking, like everything about Kevin King. If you haven't heard the podcast, go back and listen. There are three episodes dedicated to that, because we did 2-hour marathon. And the man is amazing. So go back and check that out. Now, Ben Cummings, I haven't followed his latest, but in his teaching of a while ago, a few months ago, he was certainly not particularly following that up. So I think that's a great subtlety. Next thing Kevin King talks about, and Ben Cummings talks about specifically this, that you need to engage your customer. So Ben Cummings, creating a new sort of hybrid here. Ben Cummings goes back to his customer and says, look, just tell me what you think about the product. I'd really like to know. Just hit reply and let me know. You can incentivize them. He doesn't bother. But here's the reason why. Now, some people will come back to you and let you know things. That's valuable because it's useful feedback. But here is the subtlety of the marketing thinking. Because what it does is evoke this commitment and consistency principle. And if you haven't read the book, which whose title totally escapes me now, about the principles of marketing and persuasion. I think it's just called Persuasion. And I don't remember the author, but I'll put it in the show notes. But that is one of the main persuasion principles, is commitment and consistency. So if I had a bunch of people here and I said, what do you think of this? Oh, I think it's absolutely fantastic. Then if I come back to them and say, you know, thank you so much for your kind words. You know, you were saying that this product service is really fantastic. Would you mind just kind of writing that down in like a couple of sentences? And could I possibly use that on my website? Chances are quite high they'll say yes, right? Because they don't want to look inconsistent because they feel like they were lying before, you know, and that's a very powerful social kind of convention, a social kind of driver. It's not even a convention, it's quite a powerful basic behavioral driver. Anyway, so what you do in the second email, according to Ben Cummings, and I try this and it does work, is people will ping you a reply saying, yeah, well, I really like this about the product. And then you can go back to them in your third email, automatic secrets, remember, so you don't have to do it manually, and just say, oh, could you possibly leave a review? Now, what this does is only a certain percentage, maybe 5% of people or something like that, will come back to you with a reply on email and say, I really like the product. But what that means is those small percentage, when they get that third email and it says, please leave a review, are more likely to leave a review or seller feedback because they have actually already said that they like it. So they feel, I've said I like it, I better follow through on this, actually, only a certain percentage, right? So that is a useful tip, I think, in terms of how you structure the emails. Now, exactly how you optimize them and the lengths and stuff, David, then you may want to look at that. So now, if you've got a fantastic email sequence, if you're getting 8-9%, then I'd be grateful if you can share with the group. Perhaps go to the Facebook's the easiest place, www.amazingfba.com/FB Facebook. And David, if you can share with us what you're doing that's getting you 8 or 9% conversion, that's fantastic. And actually, I think we can all have a debate there on possible, and I say possible, ways to improve it. So in other words, what we need to do is come up with some models to test, but we need to come up with reasonably decent hypotheses, not just random. So if this structure is working for you, let us know what it is. The structure that I've just mentioned works for me quite well. I haven't been measuring the percentages, so I'm very slack on that because that means I'm driving a bit blind on that. But it could be that you could swap out your email sequence in a different way and get a different conversion percentage. If you've got something converting 8-9%, I would be inclined, as you're implying, to just tweak it and just change the length. So as ever, guys, this is a fascinating business. It's very creative indeed. There's the Amazon side of it, but then there's all the other things we can do around and about Amazon. And building an email list is one thing, but building reviews and how you do that is another. And the exact use of emails and exactly what converts and what doesn't. And sometimes it's the most unexpected thing. Sometimes longer converts better than shorter. So David, if you're listening, I would say test longer copy and shorter copy and the original as the control. And we'll do 100 sales on each. And that doesn't give you a great deal of data, but that's like the minimum I would do. I mean, I would probably change it out. If I have three versions, I would change it out week in, week out for say 6-7 weeks. And that gives you a good spread over time. And it gives you a good amount of data as well. So maybe you've got 300 sales and you can measure your conversion percentages that way. Anyway, so stay in touch about that. Folks, keep the questions coming in the Facebook. It's a great resource for everyone. I just mentioned briefly that I'm about to finally kick off the mastermind talk, in which I've just been creating a little secret Facebook group. So you won't be able to search for that. It's not publicly available and it never will be. It's a secret private group, and the masterminds are private as well. I'm not going to be revealing who's in the masterminds, and I can mention generally what we come up with if we come up with nice things, but it won't be any specifics. So if you want to know more about that, then go to www.amazingfba.com/mastermind. I'm actually going to be creating an online mastermind for people like David and Brian Cook, who's based in Canada, who are really active members and who might be interested in interacting more with each other and with me, but who live abroad, and in their case, USA, Canada. They're not going to be coming to London for meetings. This mastermind that I'm about to kick off is a physical mastermind in London. So it would mean that you would need to live in London or nearby, or you're prepared to commute. It'd be once a month, half a day. And I'm throwing in a couple of bonuses for people who sign up in the summer, which would be that you'll get a 1-hour Skype call with me consultation, which is normally reserved only for my mentees. And I'm not going to do that again in the future because I'm way too busy anyway. Running the podcast and helping mentor people. They're doing well, but it's costing me time and I need to get back to my own business. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I'll get you a month of email support. And again, that is normally only available to mentees. So if that interests you, great. Get over to amazingfba.com/mastermind and look for London Mastermind. Other than that, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's that mastermind or whatever else it is, but I really do urge you to join some kind of mastermind. Facebook groups are great. I like to think that our Facebook group is very much more active than the other ones of a similar size that I've seen around. It's not overwhelmingly large. There are some Facebook groups that have got 12,000, 25,000 members. I mean, there's great information, but you've got to dig around all day to get it. And great information if you've got time. But this is a bit of a simpler one to deal with, I think. It's not going to get buried. And there are other Facebook groups with 500, 600 members, similar sort of size to us now. But there's a lot of spamming. There's people wanting reviews. There's people just going in there spamming about their products and their services. And it gets a bit boring because it's not a very helpful resource. So for that reason, I don't have anyone coming in offering, asking for reviews. I just gently ask them to not do that and remove it. And if you come in and spam the group, I remove it instantly and block you. So for that reason, it's a more valuable space, I like to think. But there is no substitute for a mastermind of like-minded people. Skype call groups can be good, but there is the best thing, the gold standard, folks, is face-to-face. So however you achieve that, however you organize it, get yourself a face-to-face mastermind with some good like-minded people, preferably led by a couple of guys or at least one or two guys or girls in it who are real power sellers who you can really learn from. And that will really move your business forward. I cannot tell you how much that has personally helped me, which is one reason why I'm now offering it to my listeners and Facebook followers and email readers, because I feel that it's so important. So thanks, folks, for listening. As ever, get yourself out there, get selling, enjoy yourselves, but you know, don't get hung up on detail, but don't ignore detail either. Just keep moving forward. That's the main thing, momentum. And I have to say that when I've taken my eye off the business and get back to it, it's hard to rebuild momentum. You've got to keep momentum in your sales rank on Amazon or it starts to die off. You've got to keep momentum in your own business. You've got to keep momentum in your mentality. And I think for that reason alone, a mastermind and preferably a mentor, if you can afford both, are fantastic things to have. So I really would recommend those to you. So good hunting, guys. Good luck with this. Come back to me in the Facebook group as ever. Give me the feedback and speak to you in the next podcast.